For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
What the hell is up, Pelicans fans? You know my name, it's Elliot Clough, here again on Believe. In the New Orleans Pelicans. A little bit different of an episode today. Today I was joined by Matt Moderneau of Believe in the Wizards. Matt has worked with ESPN, Draft Express, FanSided, and a couple different other media outlets. You can check that out, what I tweeted about this podcast. You can see some of the other stuff that he's done. But a guy who's really informed and guy who knows what he's talking about. Today we talked about how the coronavirus will affect the rest of league play, how the Pelicans will proceed, whether or not they'll be able to get into the playoffs. Zion, maybe still, probably not, but maybe, winning Rookie of the Year. And then Brandon Ingram possibly, most likely, re-signing with the Pelicans. That's the team that I cover. And hey, if the regular season is over, maybe we know who the Pelicans will be picking in this year's NBA draft. You're going to have to stick around to find out. Once again, here is my conversation with Matt Moderneau of Believe in the Washington Wizards. All right, I want to welcome in Matt Moderneau. Moderneau?
Moderneau.
Moderneau. I heard that like 5 minutes ago and totally forgot already. So good start here. But we've got Matt Moderneau of Believe in the Wizards podcast joining us today. Very excited for this. How you doing today, Matt?
Good to be on. Looking forward to it.
We are as well. So on the last podcast that I recorded just a couple days ago, I said, you know, this is tough. We use sports to get away from the rest of the real world, right? And right now, it's just difficult to do that. So we got to talk about the coronavirus today and how it's affecting the league. You know, there's so many different ways that this could shake out. I outlined three of them on the show on Tuesday and said that really the regular season could be shortened, the playoffs could be shortened, and we could really just go straight into the playoffs. We really don't know how the future is going to shake out. What are you thinking, Matt?
On our podcast, we were a little split. My co-host thought they would kind of jump right into the playoffs. I would be surprised if there isn't some amount of a regular season. Just it'd be hard to say, hey guys, not only have you not played any games, you haven't been able to practice with each other for very long, and now here you go. It's game one of the first round of the playoffs. So I would imagine there's at least, you know, four or five games, something like that, for people to get their feet under them. But I can't imagine it being too extensive. And I guess Mark Cuban came out today or yesterday and said he expects that play will resume sometime in May, mid-May, that's his hunch. I was very shocked to see that.
I heard that today too. I was listening to The Herd and I heard a couple other things that we'll talk about in a second here. But I was shocked to hear that too. I mean, even without fans, like obviously that's the way we're going to have to start with this pandemic going on. But like, it's just shocking. I mean, Trump said that we want to get back to normal by Easter. There's absolutely no way that's happening. I think we're all on the same page with that. But I mean, when I said in reference to the playoffs on Tuesday, I was thinking October, definitely not May. It's craziness. I just didn't expect that at all. You know, I looked at the Pelicans schedule to come up here. They've only got 18 games left. That's what, 4 to 6 weeks probably of a regular season. I mean, I think they could fit it in. I mean, you said 4 or 5 games at least to get their legs under them, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes down to logistics and how do you free up the stadiums in time, or do you even play them at stadiums? I think even if they started in another, you know, 2 months, it would be without fans, would be my guess. So I would have to think that they're playing these games in whether practice facilities with cameras or smaller arenas. But it wouldn't be the traditional, here's 17,000 cheering fans, you know, ready to watch.
Right. There's no way. The government, at least, wouldn't allow that to happen, even if the NBA wanted it to. So it's just something that we're going to have to continue to wade through. Like you said, I'd be shocked if we were back in May. And heard this. This is a topic that Nick Wright and Colin Coward discussed today. The thinking was, Nick Wright was saying, was that this would benefit teams like the Lakers, who have been all in all season, as opposed to a team like the Clippers, who have been approaching the season like a marathon. You know, they're load managing Kawhi and Paul George every so often. But in my opinion, I would have to say that this would benefit, you know, as the Pelicans sit right now, they're not getting in the playoffs. But in my mind's eye, this would benefit those younger teams who haven't, I mean, Zion hasn't even been playing the majority of the season. He's got fresh legs. I think this would benefit teams like the Grizzlies, who are young, not guys who are 35 still playing in the league.
I'm with you. I think you would see some change in tactics. The teams like Toronto that have sort of mixed in some pressing and stuff like that this year, that kind of thing, I think, would be a little more prevalent than normal, because guys aren't, like you said, you know, 100 games into the season. I think people forget that, you know, the NBA preseason is pretty grueling too. So by the time you even get to the playoffs, you're pushing 90 some games, and now you've got to. And those are people that played over the summer and Team USA and things like that. So I think you're 100% right that someone like New Orleans or Memphis or whoever ends up getting that last spot would be ready to go.
You know, it could be very well vice versa. With a fresh LeBron James, that's terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how long has it been since we've actually even seen that in a playoffs? You know, most years he plays 100 games and then does some amount of commitment over the summers. So he's coming into each season, you know, with not a ton of rest. So being reasonably fresh, I wouldn't want to play LeBron, you know, on a lot of rest.
Absolutely. You know, arguably best player in the world. With KD hurt, Giannis is obviously playing at a high level, but LeBron's been doing it for so long. He's arguably still the best player in the world at 35, which is pretty crazy. But
You mentioned Milwaukee and Giannis. That's a team that I think really benefits from this, because he was obviously having some knee issues, and now he gets a chance to rest and come into things, you know, potentially fresher too. So that really favors them.
Absolutely, and the way he plays it's so downhill, and that can't be easy on your body at all.
Yeah, exactly right.
So, looking at the Pelicans specifically, you know, I looked at the remainder of their schedule, like I said, and there's 18 games left. And breaking it down, like I did on the show on Tuesday, they're playing the Spurs 3 times, the Grizzlies twice, Clippers once, Jazz once, Kings once. So that's 8 games of their 18 games, and those are pretty tough opponents. I mean, they've beat Memphis twice, the Spurs are obviously still the Spurs, and Clippers, Jazz, and the Kings were playing really good ball before the season came to an abrupt break. But ideally, and this is an absolute ideal world, the Pelicans are able to get the rest of their season and they are able to squeak out 14-4, maybe go up to above 500 before the end of the season. And it would take a little bit of a collapse from the Grizzlies, who are, I believe they're 3 games above the Pelicans as we sit right now. But do you think there's any chance that they have the ability to make the playoffs if we're able to get the entirety of the season?
From what I'd seen down the stretch, they looked like a playoff team to me. You know, the depth makes a big difference under normal circumstances. You know, that there might be top heavier teams than New Orleans, but there's just like, you know, guys 6 through 10 can all reasonably contribute, I think, which is surprising for a young team, but young, fresh legs enables you to do a lot of things that a lot of teams can't. Like, I would rather take, guy number 9 on the Pelicans, whoever you decide that is, whether it's Etuan Moore or someone like that, ahead of guy number nine on the Lakers or whoever, even at the top of the Western Conference. But just looking at them compared to the other teams in the hunt, I think the dimension that Zion adds to the team, if you have him healthy, you have JJ Redick healthy to spread the floor, and Brandon Ingram's been doing, you know, Brandon Ingram things, I like their chances. I think that's a long-winded way of saying that I actually thought that they would end up with the 8th seed if things had continued on a normal path.
I mean, it's just tough to judge right now because we just don't know the future. And that's just going to be the theme of sports talk for the next however many months where we're at. But the Pelicans do sit at 10th currently at 28-36, where the Grizzlies are in that 8th spot at 32-33. And then between them, there is the Portland Trailblazers. So we'll see. And I think the only way the Pelicans have a shot of making the playoffs this year is if we get the entirety of the season, and the COVID-19 stuff will have to chill out a lot quicker than we're expecting it to in order for that to probably happen. But
NBA talked a lot about ways to kind of mix up the format over the offseason, and talked about like play-ins for the last couple spots of the playoffs. I hope they would consider something like that, you know, a 7-10 and an 8-9, whatever the specific details are around that. But especially if you're not going to have a full regular season, I think, you know, the races are close enough. You got to give folks like somewhat of a chance. It would be hard to just say, all right, you're in the 8th seed now, things are done, you know, let's kick things off. So if they'd even did, a 1-game playoff, or 7-10 and 10 has to win 2 games in order to get the spot, something like that, I think I would take my chances if I were New Orleans in sort of a sudden death setup like that.
I didn't even think about that in putting together that list that I had. That would be an interesting move, especially when we're still technically in the same season, to make a move like that. And obviously they're going to have to work around where we're at no matter what. But adding a couple teams to the playoffs is obviously unparalleled. We haven't had that happen before. And the thing about that too is the NBA wants the Pelicans in the playoffs. Like, they're going to do everything they can to get Zion in the playoffs, basically.
I agree. And this is one of those things where, especially if you look at the Eastern Conference, as someone who covers the Wizards, no offense to my own team, there's not a ton of excitement about seeing them sneak in, or Orlando, or even, you know, Brooklyn without Kyrie. But on the Western Conference side, there's a couple big name people vying for that spot. I mean, Ja Morant's been pretty exciting. Obviously, Dame Lillard's in the mix. You've got Zion. Like, no matter where they end up, I think they get somebody that could get them some ratings. So I think you're right. The amount of national TV games that the Pelicans got before the year says a lot about, you know, the interest level from the NBA. But if Dame Lillard's your consolation prize, that's still pretty good.
Exactly. You know, that 7-10 matchup isn't necessarily favorable for the Pelicans here. They'd be matched up with the Mavs, assuming we were to go into it right now with the records as they currently sit. But I don't think it would hurt at all to do, like you mentioned, a sudden death. If anything, just give them one game. I don't think that hurts at all.
When teams are kind of bunched together, like, you know, it's probably more 8, 9, and 10 are closer together. But, you know, it makes you say every game counts when you don't have a lot of wiggle room like that, or a safety blanket.
So we did mention Zion there. Obviously, we got to talk about his potential, I guess the potential of him winning the Rookie of the Year award despite only playing however many games, coming back in January and not playing that first basically half of the season, whereas Ja Morant has played the entirety of it. Matt, what do you think? Do you think that Zion has a chance of winning Rookie of the Year, even if we don't have the rest of the season?
I think it would have been a lot more interesting and compelling if they had played the other 18, 19 games. That would put him, you know, close to 40. That's like around half the season. It's a little easier to make a case for it at that point. You know, Morant's been relatively healthy. A lot of people compared this to the rookie of the year race where it was, you know, Joel Embiid versus Malcolm Brogdon. And at the time, you know, I don't think anyone realized Brogdon would be as good as he actually is, but it was, okay, do we favor a guy that's done this consistently over the course of a season or a guy that's like unbelievably spectacular, you know, for 30 games or 31, I think was what Embiid played. I would say that the delta between Embiid's high end and Brogdon's high end was a lot bigger than Zion's impact and Morant's impact. So I think it would be a really, really tough sell for people, but there are enough people that are so pro Zion. He'll definitely get more votes than I think people would expect, especially, you know, if he could get a couple extra regular season games.
I'd have to agree with you. And looking at these stats here, I mean, Jaws played literally 40 more games than Zion this season. Zion's played just 19. You can look at the stats, and make a bit of an argument, but Jaws still averaging 17.6 points per game, 6.9 assists, and 3.5 rebounds while shooting 49% from the field. I mean, looking at Zion's too, we got to give a bit of a reference here. 23.6 points per game, 6.8 rebounds, and he's shooting 58% from the field. So Zion's just absolutely transcendent. He's polarizing. I've said enough about Zion on the New Orleans Pelicans podcast, but
the impact is huge. The fact that they looked kind of dead on arrival, you know, 30 games ago, and just the slow buzz of him getting back into things, and then the way they've looked with him in that lineup, it's just the added dynamic is pretty impressive. If he'd have finished the next 19 games or whatever, averaged, you know, and been averaging 25 points and 8 or 9 rebounds, and Morant was down to like 15 and 6 or something like that, that would have been maybe around where somebody could try to make a strong argument. But it's just the games played always factors into things like this. You always hear national writers, hey, I left Kawhi Leonard off of the all NBA teams because he only played 60 games this year. Like, if that's the kind of scrutiny those things are under, only playing 40 would pretty much knock you out of it, I think.
I'd have to agree with you. And as we currently sit, I would roll with what you said initially about him probably getting more votes than we would guess, but ultimately not winning. And you know, if Zion were given the opportunity to not necessarily lead the Pelicans, but aid in their winning ways for the rest of the season, say they were to have that dream scenario, like I mentioned, of going 14-4 and the Grizzlies just fell off and maybe Ja got hurt, or maybe his level of play just didn't measure up to what it used to be. Maybe the season 82 games really got to him. I would tend to lean Zion's way, obviously as a biased Pelicans reporter or coverage guy, podcaster. There we go. We got the word eventually. But I might lean Zion there in that particular circumstance.
Yeah, the rookie wall is a crazy thing. I think Morant is probably a little too good to totally fall off the earth there, but we've seen it happen to guys before where they peter out down the stretch, and Zion looked like he was even, you know, coming on stronger as time went on. So it would have been interesting to see how things played out for real. If you play even a couple more regular season games, and also honestly, if the playoff seeding is probably something that people look at too. If the Grizzlies were the worst team in the league and Ja put up numbers that, and the Pelicans were the 8-9 seed, that might make things a little different too.
Right. And of course, what I mentioned there was definitely a dream scenario for the Pelicans. And it can't work out that way more or less now, unless we do get the rest of the season. But, you know, we can't talk about the Pelicans without addressing Brandon Ingram and his pending free agency. You know, I've only really seen or read a couple articles about Brandon possibly leaving the Pelicans this offseason. He's had clearly the best season of his career. He's living in a smaller city as opposed to LA, where from what I've heard, he really just stayed in his apartment all the time because he wasn't used to the bigger city life, I should say. I can't particularly see any real reason for him to leave other than money. I mean, one of these lower level teams, I could absolutely see offering him a max contract if possible, if their cap allows. But do you have any plausible reasons why he would leave other than money?
I wouldn't think so. The only situation where I thought that might happen is, let's say, the Pelicans did what, you know, the Sixers had done and give everybody a redshirt year as a rookie, and Zion hadn't really played and you hadn't seen the fit there, or they'd only played a few games and the fit looked kind of clunky. But the way he shot from the perimeter this year, it allows them to be able to kind of play next to each other better than I think a lot of people may have envisioned. And that sort of added dimension from him, it makes it a little more reassuring, I think, that they could be a really good tandem long term. The only reason you wouldn't resign if you're him is if you say, oh, we play the same position, or ideally they want to play us at the same position, and that doesn't work. You know, for as good as Zion is, it's tough to have more than one non-shooter on the court at a time. And Lonzo Ball's helped his, you know, his case to be there long term by shooting better as the season's gone on. And but it's hard to put, you know, if Ingram's only a mid-range guy and you've got him next to Zion, that probably doesn't work. And I would have been surprised if he'd have stayed. But the way he shot it, the way they've looked together, it just seems to make a lot of sense. And they've already said, I think, if I remember this correctly, David Griffin basically said, like, we're going to give him the bag. We're gonna offer him what he wants. So I would be really shocked, like you said, to not see him there next year.
Which really makes sense. David Griffin, one of the best front office guys in the league, if I do say so myself. I think something that the Pelicans definitely need to address, and we'll talk about it here, is to get, preferably, you know, the ideal would be a 3-and-D guy. That's what the Pelicans are really in need of right now. A scoring wing who can lock up your opponent's best player, if at all possible. But more shooting absolutely never hurts. You know, they've got B.I., they've got Drew, J.J. Redick, and then Zoe has absolutely stepped up, and he was shooting at a clip we've absolutely never seen before. But more shooting definitely never hurts against a guy who can play bully ball with more or less anybody in the entire league as your power forward.
I think if you're David Griffin right now, you have to sort of make a decision one way or the other. Like, hey, we're going to try to make the playoffs next year, but we're going to still look at this as a longer term thing and try to build, and we're going to be patient. Or you can kind of do what Philly did and say, like, all right, we're making some, you know, like contending level moves, and either they work out or they don't. But if you're trying to go a little more all in, I think maybe you start to package up some of these guys that could be contributing role players on other teams and look for, you know, maybe one more guy to make you a little top heavier and make the top like 6-7 of the rotation a little stronger. Because, you know, unless some of these guys take a big jump, like Nikhil Alexander-Walker's shown a couple flashes, but hasn't looked like the player people thought he would be after the preseason. Josh Hart's been pretty solid. He's got some potential if you're a contending team. Do they keep Favors long-term, or have they seen enough from Jackson Hayes? Could Okafor help somebody? So if you could start to bundle up a couple of those guys and add like maybe a bigger piece, like, again, this is the name everybody's loved this year, but like a Robert Covington or somebody like that, that might be something interesting to consider. Or you throw in whatever the lottery pick looks like and you go for an even bigger name. That might be one thing I could maybe see them considering, but I wouldn't go that route at this stage of development if I were them.
I would have to agree. You know, we were addressing the possibility of shipping a package of guys, and I really think if they were going to do that and the move was to compete now, they would have done it at the trade deadline this year.
it would have been tough this year just because you hadn't really seen what Zion was about. And I think making it a bigger move probably looked a little less realistic at that point before you'd kind of seen all your pieces together. And that was still like, let's evaluate, let's see who fits into our long-term plan. Now, if you're Griffin, you've seen enough of these guys in person to kind of have a good sense of, all right, can this guy be a factor for us longer term? Can we keep Josh Hart, or do we think, you know, Zylan Cheatham can spread the floor enough to come in next year and play some spot minutes off the bench? Like, those are the types of things I think they'll start making, you know, like final decisions on right around now.
Fair enough. So looking forward in a different way, looking forward to the draft, if the regular season is over, you know, it's looking like the Pelicans are going to be slated for a very middle pick at the end of the lottery. As far as draft needs, I mean, I kind of set it there. Probably a 3-and-D guy is what they would like. But I personally think the Pelicans are definitely in a position to draft best player available. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way the league structured, every team could benefit from going for a wing player. And that's sort of a high point in this draft, I think. There are plenty of guys like Isaac Okoro from Auburn is one name that kind of comes to mind right off the bat, or Dennis Vassell. There are plenty of guys that that people could kind of look to bolster the wing depth. But if you're New Orleans, you're not bad off in any position. Like, you could say Ingram's technically a wing, or Hart's a wing, or you could even play Ball some, you know, at the three if you needed to. So I wouldn't say like we got to reach for someone ahead of our pick. So if you know, let's say they go up to five in the lottery and get a little lucky, and you've got somebody like Wiseman falls or something like that, I wouldn't be opposed to taking a big and just kind of letting it sort itself out over the next couple years.
I'd agree with you there. If by some miracle they're able to squeak into the top five, I mean, we didn't expect them to get the number one overall pick last year. So, you know, miracles happen. I wouldn't be opposed to a guy like an RJ Hampton or I'm not sure, Denny Avdija. You know who I'm talking about there?
Avdija, yeah, the Israeli kid. Sure. Yeah, he's maybe more of a four in the NBA, yeah, just because he's kind of slow, but you couldn't go wrong with somebody kind of in the Gallinari mold.
Definitely. Well, hey, Matt, I want to thank you for joining me today here on the Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans podcast. How do we follow you on social media? How can we check out your current podcast?
I'm at Matt Moderno on Twitter, or you can follow us at Believe in Wizards, BLEAV in Wizards. And we're doing a weekly podcast. So my co-host and I, Larry Hughes, will be recording on Thursday and hope to have something out by Thursday evening.
Yes, that's Larry Hughes, the former Wizards player. Also, he played with the Cavs in the league, right? Played with LeBron?
This man is unreal. He played with Allen Iverson in his first stop. He played with Gilbert Arenas in his second stop, Michael Jordan in his third stop, Arenas again, and then toward the tail end of his career, played with LeBron James. How do you beat that in terms of teammates?
Yeah, I don't think you do. I think, I think you got a W as far as your co-host goes, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, once again, thanks again, Matt, for joining us.
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll get to see some basketball, and maybe we can see the Pelicans sneak in after all.
Hey, Pelicans fans, Elliot here once again. I want to thank you for tuning in today. An awesome episode with Matt Moderno of Believe in the Washington Wizards. And of course, I got to give you that reminder, like I do at the end of every episode. Go follow me on Twitter. You'll be getting a lot of sports content there, links to the pods, all of that good stuff. It's at Elliot Clough, E-L-I-O-T-C-L. O-U-G-H. And if you have any questions, want to voice your opinion on a podcast. I want to hear from you. Just at me or hashtag what the Pel is up. And while you're here, subscribe, leave a rate and a review. That really helps out the podcast. The more you do that, the better guests and the better quality content we'll be able to get to you. Follow Believe on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and you can check out a plethora of their other podcasts on Believe.com, or just head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play. And I've got an article coming at you here within the next couple days on what we talked about today, Zion possibly having a chance at winning Rookie of the Year, but we'll just have to see. Don't forget to shoot me those questions. Don't forget to at me on Twitter. Let me know what your thoughts are. Even if you disagree with me, I don't care. I'm just trying to interact with y'all. Of course, you can at me or hashtag what the Pel is up. Once again, I am Elliot Clough, and this was Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.